Welcome to the OA Serenity Sunday Meeting Podcast. Serenity Sunday is now hybrid, meeting in person at Roxbury Park in Beverly Hills and on Zoom. Visit the Los Angeles Intergroup's webpage at oalaig.org for information on how to join our meeting live in either iteration. Now that we're meeting in person, Serenity Sunday has regular meeting expenses and would appreciate Seventh Tradition donations to help support the meeting and this podcast. You can donate via Venmo at Serenity Sunday 2023 or through PayPal, SerenitySunday1212 at gmail.com. The opinions expressed on the Serenity Sunday podcast are those of the individual speaker and not those of Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. And now, our speaker.
My name is Michael, and I am a compulsive overeater.
Michael.
And I want to take a minute to breathe. Deanna, for asking me. It's good to see Deanna. I know Deanna for a long time, and we've had a lot of daily reprieves, haven't we? So I've been in this program. My abstinence date is July 20th, 1990. I came to you originally in the early 80s after I had gotten clean and sober and Alcoholics Anonymous. I was struggling a lot. In my first year, I had a three-pack-a-day cigarette addiction, and I couldn't stop. And I started talking about it in AA meetings, and they told me to be quiet. And I got very offended because I thought you could talk about anything in these programs. But you really, if you know the traditions, you know, I talk about my alcohol addiction in Alcoholics Anonymous. So some guy said, go talk about your cigarette addiction in Smokers Anonymous. I think it's now Nicotine Anonymous. It's still around. And so I went to Nicotine Anonymous and I talked about ad infinitum, my three pack a day, and how I couldn't live with them. And couldn't live without them. And after about 6 weeks, the three-pack-a-day addiction was gone. And the only problem is I put on 30 pounds in 30 days. And I started eating compulsively. And it wasn't the first time that I had started eating compulsively. I remember in inventory when I went to LA City College in the early 70s, I was a theater arts major. And I was a munchkin. They cast me as a munchkin. And I had like a size 27, 28 waist. And I always felt uncomfortable in my body, no matter what weight I was. I always felt my arms. I always wore long sleeves. I always, you know, wanted to cover up. And by the end of that run, it was a summer run. And I had a 28-inch waist. And then they measured me and I had a 36-inch waist. And I went from 125 pounds to 180 pounds. And needless to say, I was eating compulsively and a little nervous. I loved performing, but I was very egocentric and still am. Thank you very much. So I put on all that weight, and I didn't realize that when I was so young that I had a compulsive overeating. I was a compulsive overeater long before I did the drugs and alcohol. When I started doing the drugs, the cocaine, the speed really takes off the weight. You know what I mean? So. Anyway, I came to you and I started bitching and complaining about the Haagen-Dazs and the pizza and the eggnog shakes and everything I was cramming in my mouth to not feel. And I don't know about you, if you know, even if you're not abstinent, even if you are anesthetizing, I couldn't put enough food in my mouth to stop the feelings and shut the head off. And it was very uncomfortable. So I tried to do it. I went to your meetings, but... And I heard three meals a day, and some of you didn't eat sugar, and some of you ate white flour, and I tried to do it all, and I couldn't. And I raised my hand finally, said, I'm Michael, I'm a compulsive overeater, I need help. And Richie K, may he rest in peace. No, it wasn't Richie, it was Matt Masterman, may he rest in peace. We're all getting old, aren't we, Adam? But we're here, we're alive. So he was lost over 100 pounds, and he knew the big book inside and out. And he told me to call him. He gave me his number. And I called him and he said, well, what are you going to eat today? And I said, I don't know. And he said, well, why don't you call me at the end of the day and tell me what you've eaten? And I could do that. I could handle that because I don't want to know what I eat. I want to anesthetize. I don't want to know what I'm doing. You know, Abstinence is consciousness. It's reality. And reality is for people who can't handle drugs, and food is an anesthesia. And today I'm choosing to live in reality. Thank you, Matt and Richie, up there in heaven. And so I told Matt what I ate that day, and it got me on the path of admitting to God, myself, and another human being the exact nature of what I was putting in my mouth. And Matt took me kind of through the big book, and I started to get comfortable. And of course, the weight came off. And you know, comfortability is dangerous. And and when I stopped coming to you guys, especially if I put down the food, I get uncomfortable again. The head gets busy. The resentments come up. I'm very uncomfortable this morning. I don't know if Diane is with us in New Jersey. I don't have capability to see her, but oh, there you are, Diane. Good to see you in person. Yeah, I just have all this mishigas in my head that gets between me and my higher power. And the steps help clear that out. And the bottom line is, I mean, I talk to my sponsor on a daily basis, and that's crazy, because my sponsor doesn't even live in this country. He's semi-retired. He lives in Mexico, and I'm like a leech. You know, once I find a sponsor that I relate to and I trust, I don't let go. I think I saw Carl on here. Carl, many years ago, I would call Richie on a daily basis with a little inventory and telling him all the stuff that was going on and giving him my food. And Richie finally said, "Michael, I want you to give me a reprieve on the weekends. Call somebody else." Richie talked like that. So Carl, God bless him, was the recipient of that. And I had just started teaching at the time. And I was just very, very nervous and crazy. And Carl, and I give Carl between, I go eat lunch, I tell Carl what I was going to eat, and his machine would be on. I don't know if you remember this, Carl, but once you were kind enough to say, you know, it's nice you're giving me the food, but you can talk about what's going on, you know, before you eat as well. And so all the craziness that was going on, plus my food, went on Carl's machine. And machines are better than nothing. You know what I mean? Many times, and Terrell won't be available and stuff, and I'll give him the exact nature of what's going on to his machine. And then I'll say a prayer to a God that I don't really understand, but has given me a good life and has kept me from killing myself with food many, many days at a time. So let's see. I think I started the time myself. Yes, I can see how many minutes I have left. So what happened is I went out in my other program. And with me being an alcoholic, it's really easy for me to know that if I'm using or drinking, I'm not abstinent. That's a part of my abstinence. And so when I went out, I got really scared. And I had heard somebody, we can mention the big book in this meeting, right? So there's a story called On Acceptance. And I think it's around page 417. I relate to the story a lot. In those days, Dr. Paul was alive. He was the writer of that story. And I happened on a meeting. I think I went to a meeting because I always wanted to hear Dr. Paul. I wasn't going to meetings, guys. I don't advise that if you want to stay comfortable in your abstinence. Mm-hmm. And Paul was at the podium and he said, "Never in my 20 some odd years of sobriety have I had a problem to which the 12 steps has not offered me a solution." Well, I was so far away from the 12 steps. I was looking for answers everywhere else. I had a legitimate reason to do so. My mom was a schizophrenic, literally a full-blown schizophrenic in the early 50s. Multiple suicide attempts, shock treatment. She had an operation called a lobotomy that they performed in those days. They cut away the part of the brain that they thought, anyway, that she had that operation, and it didn't make her any better, but it didn't make her, you know, any worse either. So I just have memories of my mother and very scary stuff as a kid. So I thought that perhaps I had a little schizophrenia going on. So I went to a group therapy in those days and a psychiatrist. I think I was seeing three psychotherapists, and a lot of them were telling me to get out my feelings. And to, you know, I remember taking a tennis racket. Oh man, I can still, I can feel it today. It's so easy for me to get into resentment. And I blame my mother for leaving me. And how could she do that? And then you guys told me I was full of self-centered fear. And that my mother, by the way, coincidentally died in Camarillo State Hospital, 44 years old, going to get a pack of cigarettes. Yeah, she just keeled over from a heart attack. And so needless to say, I wasn't real happy about a God that could take my mother away at Fort Frayne. You know, what was her? I remember when they were burying her, and my dad asked the rabbi, Rabbi, what's the point? You know, this lady suffered for 44 years. And the rabbi's answer was, you know, Louis, sometimes we just don't know, you know, God's will. Well, that I don't, that's not an answer. You know what I mean? I want an answer. I still want an answer today. And it gets me very uncomfortable. The only difference is that I have 33 years of abstinence behind me. I have 33 years of proof that there is a power that is greater than myself that gets me out of bed in the morning, and I don't want to get out of bed. If they don't find me out, at the end by July, I'll have 29 years in a career that I love, that I really love. And even though I love it, I still don't want to get out of bed in the morning. You know, covers are, especially in the cold. So anyway, I have proof, but that's not enough. You know, in the big book where it says, you know, we make all kinds of foolish decisions in the beginning, but we rely on our intuition because God gave us brains to use. Well, I've been doing this for 33 plus years, and I wake up and I still need to go to God, probably more so now than I did in the past, because I have all kinds of crazy thoughts and ideas when I wake up. Don't I, Terrell, wherever you are? And but thank God, God has given me a sponsor that's available. But, you know, I have to be proactive in my recovery. I had a sponsor in the other program that they called him a dictator sponsor. He told people what to do. He's a strong sponsor. And he always used to say, you know, there are no dictators without dictatees. So you can tell sponsees all you want to. And if they don't want to do it, they're not going to do it. But I know that this dictator helped a lot of people, and he came from a place of love. So I heard Dr. Paul say this, and I was too afraid to ask for his phone number. But his wife Max was sitting in the front row, and I asked Max for the phone number, and she gave it to me, and I started to call Dr. Paul, and I was scared to death of him because he was in the big book, but he was like a celebrity. I like celebrities, you know, especially in the program, you know, circuit speakers, their podium. Many times my old sponsor, who was the dictator sponsor, you know, and he'd hear people from the podium talk, and he'd say, kid, that's just podium talk, for Christ's sake. Live with those people and you'll see what they're really about. So anyway. Oh my God, my head is just very busy. I have all kinds of energy this morning. So I had never had a home group in this program or in my other program. And so I told Paul I was thinking of joining a home group. And this home group is very structured and disciplined. And they do things they believe. This is why I'm wearing a coat and tie today. I do not normally come to meetings in coat and ties. But if I believe, and I do in my soul, but some mornings I don't, that Overeaters Anonymous is saving my life a day at a time and keeping me alive and giving me a good life. So if you're going to represent the program that's saving your life, put on a coat, put on a tie. It's a big deal. I'm wearing jeans, by the way. But so anyway, I joined this structured and disciplined group that taught me to get commitments at meetings. Even today, if there's a Dodger game or there's a Laker game on and there's an OA meeting, the Dodgers got my attention. I'm going to go to the Dodger game. But this structured and disciplined home group says, no, you don't plan your meetings around your social life. You plan your social life around your meetings. So if I have a commitment, my Wednesday night meeting is sacrosanct. And that's the way it is. My OA meeting is a Saturday morning kitchen sink. It's sacrosanct if somebody asks me to speak. Although Terrell is kind of lax in that regard. Actually, Terrell gave me direction not to wear a coat and tie when I was secretary of that meeting. I could take that direction. That was kind of cool. But then again, I don't come in in tank tops and shorts and stuff like that, even though I want to. I want to do it my way. And you tell me that God's way is different than my way, and that when I do it my way, I get in trouble, but God loves me anyway, you know? And and I told my AA sponsor, I said, you know, I was in OA before, and, you know, you believe in strong sponsorship. You know, I don't know about you guys, before I had a sponsor, I'd run my ideas by everybody. And the person that agreed with me, I'd take his suggestions. And I got in bad, bad shit. It really didn't work. And so, and plus, you know, if you're like me, you don't trust people. You know, you have a mom that's, you know, schizophrenic. You have a father that dies of cirrhosis of the liver. He was in and out of hospitals, raised by a grandmother, an untreated Al-Anon that called me a Hazar Shaddam kid. She took on my case at 60 years old, and she was angry because her son married a schizophrenic. Her other son was an alcoholic. Her husband was an alcoholic. Her other son, my Uncle Danny, may he rest in peace, in the early 60s, decided to come out of the closet and tell everybody that he was gay. He was 30 years old. And everybody knew that he was gay. But when he admitted it, everybody ostracized. We don't talk. In those days, they thought if you date women, you can circumvent your disease of being gay. It was just so crazy. And Danny took me in a room once. It's Michael. He wept. He said, I'm living with a man and nobody understands. And I said, well, maybe you can live with a woman. People would be happy. And he said, Michael, it's more complicated than that. And a week later, we get a call. He killed himself. Wow. Overdose of Red Devils and alcohol. I'm 30 years old. My mom and dad, they told me that they were married for 5 years and they waited 5 years before they had a kid because they wanted to make sure everything was okay. Uh-huh. And then they had me. And, you know, with schizophrenia, I think the first big responsibility flip out. And so my mom flipped out. So I'm an only child. 28 years ago, I know this because my daughter is 28 years old and I'm waiting to go to a meeting. And our meeting was in the synagogue, and I'm standing on a little tributary here, but there's the sidewalk, and I'm starting to talk to an elderly lady. By the way, I'm older than that lady is now. But in those days, she was 70 years old, and her sister, and we were talking, and all of a sudden, I find myself in the middle of the street, and I'm gasping for air, and somebody's holding my head. And in those days, we used to line up in front of the synagogue before the meeting, so it's a big line, and this car hit, swerved up on the sidewalk, flipped over, took me and the elderly lady. The sister stepped back, so the sister only broke her arm. Me, I ended up in the middle of the street with a broken back, three broken vertebrae, and a concussion. And they rushed the lady to the hospital, and she died. She passed away. And she was coming to our group because she wanted to meet this dictator sponsor. Everybody had heard about him, and she never made it, 70 years old. And so I made it, but talk about fear. I mean, when I get into self-centered fear, I'm thinking, you could be standing on a sidewalk and a friggin' car can come up and kill you. So I, you know, I have the disease of self-centered fear. And so I got to surrender a lot, and I got to keep in contact. I don't have to, I choose to, because for some reason, I don't want to anesthetize myself with food anymore. I don't want to do it. And it's more painful to talk to you, but it's worth it. Another thing that's coming to my mind is I went back to college, by the way, and I got a teaching credential. And, you know, being all this time abstinent, there's a lot of adventures I've had. But I remember taking a computer class and feeling less than exactly like I felt in class. And I wanted to run. And the teacher seemed to be calling on people more than me, and she didn't want to help me. And finally, I don't know why I stayed in the class. I told the teacher, I said, you know, I'm so dumb. I'm not getting this. And she says, Michael, you're not. There are people that are slower than you in this class. And I said, but it's hard. They didn't tell me it would be hard. And she said, Michael, it'll be worth it. It's hard, but it's worth it. So if you've been abstinent for a while, thank you for the warning. I could hear it. It's hard, but it's worth it. And it passes. All the feelings and the thoughts and the mishigas goes away when you work the steps. talk to the sponsor, we talk to each other, reason things out. There's a loving God that comes. And in retrospect, at 33 years, I have four kids. I'm an only child, right? One of them's clean and sober and Alcoholics Anonymous for 17 years. I have one of them that is diagnosed with schizophrenia, my youngest son. And I have two daughters. One of them became a teacher in it. Life is, on life's terms, happening. And it's there, and it's in a living color. And I'm there present most of the time to experience it. So I thank you for Deanna giving me the present of coming here and for seeing you as well. We're back on the road to recovery today. And I'm done. Thank you very much for the invitation.